The story of the Transfiguration follows the prophecy of Jesus' passion and death and his commission to the disciples to take up their cross and follow him. The Transfiguration establishes Jesus' divinity, his unique connection and relationship with God. It's like the relationship that Moses and Elijah had with God, but more so. And so that's one of the things that happens in this story, is that Moses and Elijah and all the memories associated with them are brought into this story, but then Jesus is established as being like Moses and Elijah, but more so. Moses' face becomes shining in his contact with God. In Exodus 34, 29 to 30, 33, 35, Moses' face is shining because he has been talking with God. And at one point in that story, Aaron and those who are with him, the elders of Israel, are afraid to even speak with Moses because they knew that he had been talking with God and his face was shining. And so Moses put a veil over his face so that people would be able to talk to him and that they wouldn't be overwhelmed by the divine presence of his shining face. Well, this transfiguration is like that, but it's not just Jesus' face, it's his clothes, it's everything about him. And so, once again, it's like Moses, but more so. Also with Elijah. Elijah, when he is taken up into heaven, he is with Elisha, and they are separated by a chariot, a fiery chariot with horses. And the chariot gathers up Elijah and takes him in a whirlwind up into heaven. Now, this is also, you know, the most concrete manifestation of divine presence in relation to a prophet. And so the story of Elijah is a primary story in the tradition of Israel in regard to the one who was recognizably in the presence of God and where there were physical things. Well, Jesus' transfiguration then is like the fiery chariot, but more so. And so that is also part of what is implied in his ascension and act. He ascends. He is like Elijah, but more so. The shining clothes are white like the clothes of an angel, of a divine messenger. They are shining white. And once again, it's like an angel, but more so. So that in this first episode of the story, what is described are various signs of the presence of God transforming Jesus and setting his passion in the context, then, of his divine power. So that the passion is not about, and his death is not about his being defeated. Rather, it is a sign of his divine authority and presence. Peter's response is the response of a bumbling fool. And it is also an expression of fear. In the story of Moses, Aaron and those who are with him do not say anything. But if they had, it would have this same kind of quality. To be in the presence of Jesus and Moses and Elijah was simply overwhelming and terrifying. It was terrifying because there was the possibility that you would be destroyed. So Moses, at the burning bush, takes his sandals off his feet and hides his face because he is afraid that he will be killed. He's afraid that he will be overwhelmed by the presence of the divine. And Peter's words are, on the one hand, the words of one who is really frightened. They're also the words of one who is in awe in being in the presence of these luminaries. The cloud is a sign of the presence of God. So Moses, when he went up on the mountain, entered into the cloud, and it was in the cloud then that he experienced God. So he was in God's presence, but God was not seen because he was in the cloud. Well, the voice comes from the cloud. "This is my son, whom I love." Now, I've changed the translation here because the word that is used, the words that are used in the Greek are not a title. It's not a nominative phrase. It is rather a description of God's feelings about Jesus. "So this is my son, whom I love." It's a direct expression of God's love for Jesus. And that is like what God says at the baptism. In fact, it's virtually the same words. So they are then instructed to listen to him. It is a sign, it is a word from God that says to Peter, James, and John, and to the listeners, listen to Jesus, because he speaks for God. And then when they look around, they see no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. So this is a sign of Jesus then being in the succession of Moses and Elijah, but one who is greater than Moses and Elijah. So when they are coming down from the mountain, they are instructed then to tell no one about it. It's a preservation of the secret of Jesus' identity, until after he has been raised from the dead. So they are not to tell anyone about what they have seen, because it is a sign of Jesus' divinity, of Jesus being a manifestation of God, a presence of God, God in human form. And what is implied in this is that people would never understand. And only after the resurrection would this even be a story that could be told. The secret, then, of Jesus' identity is to be kept until after the resurrection. The resurrection shows it, makes it clear that Jesus is uniquely related to God. And so only after the mountain are they, after the resurrection, are they instructed to tell this. So in telling this story, in the first episode, you want to convey the wonder and awe of this experience, of this manifestation of divine presence on the mountain. And whatever you can do to make this something that the listeners can see in your face, in your gestures, in the things that you point to, in your voice, do that. Peter's words are the words of one who is terrified and who is trying to find something to say. The words of God about Jesus are words of love, of divine love. And the end of that episode is describing the disciples' experience, the experience of Peter, James, and John. So when they looked around, they saw no one. So tell it with their emotions, with their wonder and amazement at what it is that they are seeing, so that you can see it through their eyes. That's what that sentence does. Finally, the last sentence, as they were coming down the mountain, is an indirect discourse of Jesus telling them what they are to do, rather what they are not to do. That is to say nothing about this until after the resurrection.